So that's a lot of sitting for one day. And I've never fully understood the benefits of lots of sitting. But the nice thing about the second sitting of a day, especially after 2 days, is mostly people are too worn out to resist any of this. So they just sit. And that's good, because you just are. That's all you need to be. There's nothing to do here. Just, trust me, it all works. It all comes through. It does its thing. You all sit better than ever when you're not trying to sit. It's always interesting to me when I often work with people and I come to them and they go, oh he's working with me. You know, that working with me thing is totally wrong. There's no switch to turn on or off here. It's just to be on, be available, be present, period. So I'm not going to do a talk unless it comes out of nowhere, but I really thought this is an opportunity to just chat, answer questions if anybody has them, and you know, give you an opportunity to ask the things you've always wondered. What's it like winning the Oscar? You know, what happens when you die? Whatever these questions are, you know, I mean, everybody is full of questions, but they never ask them during question period. They always take me aside afterward and ask the question. I see a finger, I see a hand, go for it.
So, we're all going back to different spaces. It seems that one of the challenges of the spaces we go back to is that kind of created a structure there. Hopefully the structure is expanding, but and there can be other people there too. This is stimulated by your comment this weekend about, you know, opening and then just watch people go back. So what can you say about keeping the process going in a different space that has old stuff around, as it were?
You know, watch yourself as you re-enter an environment. Be conscious. Be present. And what you will find most of the time, if you don't grab hold of the old patterns and the old habitual thinking process, is you will start to witness the world differently. And one of the things that will arise and will be indicative of an achievement of deeper awareness is that you will feel very compassionate about the people around you. You will see what they're going through rather than what you're going through. You'll get it from their perspective, not yours. You become one with the larger truth. And that larger truth speaks to you. And instead of falling back into the Jordan trap or the Bruce trap or whatever trap one falls into, you're suddenly looking at life from a larger outer perspective. And you live differently. Or you can. And then if you fall back into the old trap, which gets compounded by being angry about having fallen back into the old trap, you just say, whoops, whoops, and bring yourself out. If you fall into the old trap and you say something you shouldn't have said or do something you shouldn't have said, the quickest way out is say, I'm sorry, excuse me, I didn't mean to say that, or I should have said it differently, or let me talk about it from your perspective. And you start to find a different dialogue happening that really starts to free you from whatever hole you just dug yourself back into. And you start to climb out of them enough that you start to feel free. You go, I'm not limited by what just happened. I don't have to go back into the rut or the hole or the dynamic that I've been living in. You can really walk around going, I have control. I'm bigger than this. And it's not just I, Jordan, or I, Bruce. It's this I that's very alive. That's very awake to the world, not just caught up in the, you know, the Jordan structure. Because that structure is old hat. It's been around for a long time. You've been in it a long time. It's wearing down, as you probably will discover, it starts to get weaker and weaker to hold it all together. So let it go. Let it go. You don't need to be there. It's really interesting getting old, because things really do change. You change. Your environment changes. Your outer environment sometimes, but mostly your inner environment really becomes different. And you start to feel different. And for some people, people I've spoken to this weekend, it's very frightening. Like, I'm not who I was. I don't have the energy I had. I can't sleep anymore. I have all of these fears and anxieties coming out of nowhere. If you're like me, you can't urinate the way you used to urinate. I mean, all these things start to take place, and you go, oh my God, it's changing. Well, that's what it is. That's what it does. But the truth is, it doesn't only happen when you're old. It just happens to be very noticeable when you're old. But it's happening all the time. And what you can do during this entire process is just look at it from a deeper, more expansive awareness. And that expansive awareness is liberating. And you will go back to Indiana, and you will be with people you know and love who are profoundly familiar, and you will see them in a new light. You will not look at it from the conditioned response, you look at it from an unconditioned response. And that response will be deeply aware and deeply compassionate. Okay? It'll be a new life, really. Although it's the same life. I mean, the thing that keeps getting me all the time is I keep seeing stuff I've seen all my life, and I go, I've never seen this before. Truly. You've never seen it before. It's your old stuff, but you just look, oh. You see it from this perspective instead of this. It's like driving one way to work all the time. And then, you know, the ride home, you see different things. You know, this way is one set of issues. This way is another set. Change the perspective. And you really do go, wow, this is a ride I don't remember. And it's beautiful. It changes things. Okay?
But what are the hand motions that's what you're doing whenever you're... That's interesting.
They're called mudra. They're positions that you'll see on the Buddha's statues, Shiva statues. They're a very ancient kind of posing. But the pose creates energy, force, or sensation. And it's very subtle, powerful, and directive. It should be really important to you as a martial arts teacher, because you will discover as you start to work more and more deeply in all this that all of these big motions have subtle inner motion that affect the entire alignment of your system and of the chakra system that we've spoken about. And so it allows energy flow that is very extraordinary and very pinpointed. I have no control over the mudra. It happens. I never started out to have or do mudra work. It just took place. But what I discovered as it was taking place is that it has enormous emotional resonance and spiritual resonance, psychic resonance, and I can enter into another person and I can touch part of their energy construct, not just their physical, biological construct, but their energy construct, and I can open stuff up, change the dynamic, alter a knot, untie a knot, and let something flow. I do not know how it works. I have never had a clue to it, but I can tell when it happens, and I believe you can tell when it happens. Something is different. It's like, it's a feeling. It's like, oh. And it liberates. It ultimately, over a period of time, frees you more and more, and the energy becomes very dynamic. It's not different than touch, but it's touch at a distance, and it's very subtle, and it touches pinpointed spaces rather than generalized spaces. You know, I always, in my class, talk about the power of hand on the shoulder or on the back or on someone's head, you know, just comforting. This is very much like that, but it's so much more than that, because it really carries on a dialogue with your entire inner being. And people who are open, you know, you're very open, your whole group is very open, it allows a lot of entry. So I can get to places where most people I can't, they won't allow me to. And it doesn't matter even if they don't allow me to, because I find secret paths passageways, you know? I always call the underarm passage, you know? People have no idea I've just gone in through the side door. And that's what I do, because I really can open up a channel inside, but I can see where I'm not wanted. You know, it's very clear, do not touch me there. And I still often will touch you there, but in a way that will make you not so angry or resistant. Because we're all protective. You know, we're all very protective. And we have reason to be protective because a lot of people treat us unconsciously. It's hard to trust consciousness. It's hard to trust somebody is actually coming at you lovingly and consciously. But that's what happens in this situation or with a teacher who has opened and surrendered to something larger. If it's a manipulative thing, and I've seen that happen, then you have to get an alert system inside that goes. And I see when that happens in people, and sometimes wisely so. Mostly not. Mostly, take a breath, say okay, and it will serve. So that's really what it is, and it's kind of extraordinary. And again, because you're a martial artist, if you can break down the moves that you're doing with great force and energy, and just try them really slowly. Again, I talked to you about my Aikido background. Not a big background, but a little bit. But that little Aikido background taught me about this idea of getting out of the way, of slowing it down. It's also Tai Chi. It does, you know, it's the very slow approach to the physical. When you start to move the physical very slowly, you enter into the metaphysical space. When you enter into metaphysical space, you start to know what you're doing. When it's all gross external stuff, it will come at you so strongly, you will never understand the implications internally. You have a capacity to begin to teach martial arts in a way that hasn't been taught, you know, probably for centuries, because not many people have that access to the underpinning of what this all comes from. But it's really the deep inner, what do you call it, delicate spiritual content being expressed in profound physical force. It's a big deal. And learn to do it, and you'll be really served by it. And so will everybody who studies with you. Okay.
You know, I'm new here.
Yes?
But I saw you on an interview you were doing, and I recognize the, I noticed the gift. I probably need a lot of fine-tuning, but I also needed to do that kind of work. And just the last few years, working with people, and I can do exactly what you were saying. And I've never jumped out of the work I'm doing because I feel I've been doing a certain work for 25 years, and it's a very dense energy I work with. And I've never had the courage or the just jump out, do what I know that feels a gift. And I'm not sure if I need a lot of fine-tuning with it.
You might question why you're hesitant and what the fear is. What is
I don't know how to advertise it.
Are you trying to do it as a profession, or are you trying to do it because you just want to do it?
I feel like I'm being pushed out. I just keep saying, no, I'm going to stay where I am. It just keeps going. Push.
I'm not sure I know the advertising mechanisms. You know, I mean, people starting in a new world, there are probably ways to do it. When I started, I moved into a new town. I went to the university. I said, I know how to teach Hatha Yoga. Let me teach a Hatha Yoga class. They said, sure. It's part of their, what they call it, student center programming. So I taught a Hatha Yoga class, and at the end I had a meditation. Closed eye, quiet meditation. At the end of the course, I said, guys, I teach another class privately. That's an open eye meditation that's very strong. And if you're wanting to continue what we've been doing in this class, you're welcome to come. It's free and available. And they all came. And I still have friends with some of those people. That's 30 years ago. And it started very simply. I started in school. That's one thing. I'll tell you another thing that I've been learning. You may not quite be there. You'll have to know. I've started working with people who don't even know I'm working with them. because I see I can do it. I literally walk down the street and I can feel in the brief moment that I have contact with a person walking by me, I can enter into the system and I can release something. I have no idea why I do that. I can even do this bizarre thing. It sounds very weird, but I can reach, as they walk by me, I can reach past me and get back and go into them as they're passing by and make a minuscule correction, but it's really valuable. The heart wants it done. It wants to do it. And I just feel it's really about love. It's a kind of sending love into the being that just passed you. I now feel everybody's life story for some reason. It just fills me up. It may not be the true story, but I feel what's going on. And the urge to be of help, the urge to embrace and to say it's going to be okay, that kind of thing is very strong. You can learn to do that. And it doesn't ever come to a teaching. It never comes to any feedback. You'll have no idea if you ever actually impacted these people or not. But you will feel something in you driven by some universal force that will in some way probably impact people. It's a kindness and a goodness. If it's anything beyond that, you'll be in trouble. Karmically, you'll be in trouble. But if it doesn't have anything to do with you and you just become the vessel through which this emanates, great. So feel your way into it. Okay?
I wanted to piggyback on what Jordan's question. I kind of have the opposite. So I feel really full from class, and then it's really great to talk to people, and I feel really open, and people look really beautiful when I'm talking to them. Like, this way, I just feel really connected. And then I go home, where I'm alone, and then the bad habit starts, I think, because like I don't know what to do with myself. Like, and it feels weird to have like no stimulation. So like I get on the computer, for example, which is like the killer, right? But what am I don't know what to do.
I have a number of friends who are very alone, and they've each found through aloneness how to have a life. And I've been very stimulated by what they do because, you know, we all face the possibility of aloneness. And some are in it, some are edging toward it. You never know what will take place. Even if you're not alone in the world, many of us are alone in relationship. I mean, I'm in a 50-year marriage almost, but there's still aloneness. We all have it. And how do you find a way to love yourself, engage yourself, stimulate yourself into action, do something other than retreat from the world and retreat from your aloneness, and embrace the outer? How do you do that? I'm probably not the best coach for that because I haven't exactly had to do it, but I watch my friends and they do, they have, one is an artist and she just draws all the time. She's also in AA. So she gets to one meeting after another all the time, and she talks to groups of people all the time about her aloneness and her, you know, I am an alcoholic, they say. I mean, she hasn't had a drink in 30 years, but she's an alcoholic, and she finds a community. She joins a Jewish temple, and she's really involved in the temple, although they're not as involved in her as she would like. She just gives, and she finds a way to keep herself stimulated and engaged and involved in the world. She travels a little bit, you know, she goes to places, and she goes to places and just rents a room in a hotel and just walks on the beach and goes, takes herself to a movie and out to dinner and at the same place often, and will just start talking to the waiters and waitresses. I know it sounds a little bit lonely, but the truth is she's making a life for herself, and she always has her drawing, and her drawing is wonderful, just wonderful and enriching, and I've been very impressed by that. I have another friend, a very dear friend, who single man, living alone, actually living in my house, although about to move, and he reads all the time. He is incredibly involved in reading. He took himself back to school. He got himself a degree in linguistics for no reason I could understand and nothing he can do with it at all, but he loved linguistics, so he did that. And he's very, very, he loves television. And he loves all these amazing shows that are on television. He watches one after another. And he's created a life. He loves to cook. He makes himself wonderful meals. I'm throwing out pretty obvious things in a way. But he has made a life for himself. And he is not lonely or alone. And he's very engaging when there's people. What's the thing that will do that for you? People always said to me, my wife particularly, what do you want to do in retirement?
What?
In retirement, what do you want to do? And I never had an answer. My dad had no answer for it, and it was really painful. He didn't know what to do with himself. And I, in a way, started going, I don't know what to do with myself. You know, I didn't really know. And, you know, I found, well, funny as it may be, my life is full every day without my doing anything. I couldn't figure that out. And then recently, I think I've talked about this, I've started to become a photographer. Came out of nowhere, truly out of nowhere. But I just was walking down the street, same streets around our house in San Rafael, and there was a huge, big, tall tree and these wires, and all of these crows sit up there. And from a very high distance, they just drop loads of shit all over the street. And it literally explodes everywhere. And I looked at it one day and I said, my God, this is a Jackson Pollock painting. And all I had to do was go click, and there I had a Jackson. It was beautiful. It's beautiful. If you don't tell people what it is, they're really awed by it. And then I started looking at the street and seeing things I'd never seen before. Just one thing after another. I started changing how I was seeing. And I started looking at cracks, at stains, oil spills, grates, signs, I mean, everything. And I started seeing it. And then the most amazing thing was when I took these pictures, I would manipulate them because I found I could. And one of the things that happened more than anything was that the street, when you bring in a lot of contrast and bring a lot of black into it, it starts to break into something I would call cosmological space. It's so beautiful. And I realized I am looking into the cosmos. I am looking at a Hubble telescope image in the street. And I started taking these pictures and loving it. I'm just bringing this up because there was nothing in me prepared to be a photographer. But now I can't stop walking around seeing. And now it's changed to tree bark. It's changed to certain buildings in New York that, I mean, I'm starting to see so many things. The only thing I don't know what to deal with is people, because I want to take pictures of everybody, but I think it's so invasive to just take pictures of people. So I don't do that yet. But I am taking pictures of stuff, and I am finding I love doing this. When I turn on the TV and it's really too tense for me or too depressing, I go turn off the TV and I go sit with the pictures. And I am becoming what you might call, I guess people call, an artist. There's no reason why something like that can't happen for you. Why all you have to do is, I don't know what you have to do, this was an unexpected thing for me, but wait for the moment that tells you what to do. And until then, watch some television, or go on the computer. I know it's deadly, but there are definitely things on the computer that can stimulate, and you'll start to have more and more of a life. And the other thing, for whatever it's worth, sitting still and going deep, it seems like you're doing nothing, but you're doing everything. You're really not doing everything, you're letting go of everything, and you're just being everything. And that's where the directives come from. That's where, when I walk, I've talked a lot about walking, when I walk, it's become like a meditation in action. And I know that's not a new thing, a lot of people do that, Thich Nhat Hanh, you know, people talk about meditation in action. But I just walk, and everything falls away, and I'm just suddenly in a state of grace with the world. I'm there watching things I've never seen before. You can do that. It's just possibilities. It's hard to cognate an idea, but it's not hard to let it arise. So just sit, be quiet, or read a book. I mean, reading books is great because in a way we're very internalized when we read a book. So stuff comes up in us, even though there's a story in front of us, our own life starts to show itself in reflection to the story we're reading, and that's good too. TV and movies are not as good with that, because they're too busy, they're too involving in an external way. Reading is internal. So anyway, those are some suggestions. And I'm not really good at this, And I don't look forward to aloneness. I'm praying that I'm not the one who will have to deal with that, you know? And Blanche is really good alone. She's got her horses, and she's a really happy person, you know? So she can handle stuff. I have to work at it.
Follow up on that. So specifically when I come back from class, and I think what it is, it's like I'm at a like different vibration.
Yes, yeah.
And everything, I mean, I do a ton of things. Mm-hmm. I mean, cooking is like the best.
Right, right.
Because there's a way I'm still doing something, and right. Then the food is...
And I get to benefit from it every so often.
Yeah, and the benefit and the, yeah, all of that. But sometimes it's, I don't know, for whatever reason I'm not cooking, but it's not like I don't have other activities. I could do these other activities. I don't want to do those other activities. Or doing... takes me lower.
So let me throw the one key thing out at you that I think you need to hear, which is, what is it in you that's judging one thing to be better than the other? Why is one thing higher and the other lesser? Why is one thing the place you want to be and the other place you don't want to be?
Because one place things are beautiful and feel open, and another I feel more dead or less alive.
Let me encourage the thing I've said it so many times, even this. Experience the deadness. Experience the nothing happening. Experience that this is one thing and this is another, but it's all part of one spectrum. And this is not better and this is not worse. It just is. And once you start to accept the what is of what's happening, it's transformed into something else. It's no longer a good or bad thing. It just is what it is, and it's noble and it's extraordinary. You're just part of, you're still part of this thing. And even if it doesn't feel in comparison to something else like it's wonderful, it is real in its own terms. And when you enter into its reality, you become non-judgmental, non-searching, reaching for something else. You become one with the truth of that moment. That's very valuable, and that's really kind of what you want. It's what happens here, and then you get back into, this isn't it, this is something else, this is different, this isn't as good. All of that mental thinking is the problem. Get rid of the mental thinking by just going, okay, just say yes to it. Don't stop thinking, you don't have to. Just go, or you just even say, it's not true. This isn't less, it's just different, feels different. And I have lots of feelings that I don't like as much as other feelings, but now I honor them. I just honor them. I go, okay, yeah, you have a right to be.
I think everything in our world oscillates like on a sine wave.
Yeah, absolutely.
It does this, and at a certain point, maybe through meditation, maybe through divinity, you can raise your vibration to the point where you're kind of on a solid, just like a beam, like a laser beam, just with a very high vibration. But I think for the most part, this is the flow, the up and down. And for you, maybe when you're feeling it down, it's just the downside and all these things go back up.
I'm not sure about, I mean, there are people, I think teachers, who would tell you, yeah, there's a place that's always this, you know, some high level vibration. I think reality is variable, and the non-attachment to that sine wave is really the liberation you're looking for. Not to keep the wave on one level, but to be free to be any level.
I think that in my own mind, the construct of the single being, that kind of vibration, is almost like invisibility. Invisibility. It's a point, I guess for most people, it's not attainable. Or for everybody it is, but not without a lot of work.
Well, okay. I mean, I get that's pretty much what leads people to spiritual life on some level. And I get it, but not only is it attainable, it's happening to you as we speak.
Right.
It's there all the time. And finding that thing which is there all the time is really the journey that we're on. But like I say, it's not a surprise when it's revealed.
Well, it's there all the time, but we're grounded by all the bullshit and a lot.
Yeah, well, or just stuff.
Yeah.
Stuff. Yeah, no, it's hard to persuade people that the thing they're looking for is so alive in them as we speak. And it's just there. And you've been looking at it from the minute you were born. It never has gone anywhere. It's your very essence of being. It is so alive and vibrant and real and so at the core of your existence that you don't even notice it.
But it's it gets masked as you're indoctrinated.
Yes,
yes. Teach you language,
yes.
Teach you values, morals.
Yes, that's what happens. Right. So all we're doing is letting go. Again, this is subtractive. This is not additive, it's subtracting stuff to see what's really there. And the more you let go of, the more unbelievable availability everything else has. It's extraordinary to let go of everything and find out that's the only way to have everything. It's only when you let go. Surrender. And that act of surrender is a learned process. And we're all learning it. That's the great part of this practice. It focuses on surrender. Let it go. Let it go. It's not letting go to get something, because that is additive. It's letting go to let it go. It doesn't matter. It's a real kind of freeing of the self. You know, the bondage of the self is a bondage to ego mind.
Self-created.
Yeah, self-created. You've built the bondage. You've built the jail you're in. Take the bars out.
Sometimes I feel a different sensation in the front of the heart chakra versus the back. And I'm wondering if there's something for us to know about that, and if it's also in other chakras too. Like it might be more like a different feeling sensation.
Like there's a chakra in the front and the back?
Yeah, I know. So I feel a different kind of energy in the front and the back at the same time.
Uh-huh.
Is there something to understand about that?
No. Learn. Watch it. No. Chakras are really extraordinary spaces, and they radiate. And they radiate everywhere. And they're like these great discs that just reach out, you know, and they're very, very powerful, and they are sensory. You can feel them. When they open up, it's an alive sensation. When you see someone you love, or someone who's beautiful, or something that cringes you, the chakra, that's what you're feeling, like, you know, it's an opening and closing of this chakra. Sometimes we do it consciously, mostly we're unconscious of it. When you relax and you just settle into a deep simplicity, this chakra just wafts open and it embraces the world. And every person I look at, it touches in a different way. Every person I look at is filled with richness, treasures. Beauty, kindness, difficulty, structural problems. I mean, it's all there, and this feels the whole thing, and it feels it forward and it feels it backward. You know, I've got this incredible statue sitting behind me. Do you think I don't feel that energy? I mean, half of this class is, you know, Bruce Rubin thinking he's teaching, you know, or whatever, it's this person. It's energy. It's an energy system. You know, there's stuff working here. And as much energy as is being put out, each of you is feeding out as well. And it feeds into the whole system, and we feel it all over ourselves. We feel all these sensations, some of which you can understand and kind of work with in your mind. Most of them are incomprehensible. They're feeling. They're power. They're knowing. They're force fields all going on. And, you know, if you want to look at a picture of yourself, take a look at the Hubble telescope. Look at some of those galaxies. More of what I see when I work with you is huge energy systems doing all of these things. And they're so amazingly beautiful and powerful and complicated. Nobody here is a simple system. Nobody. And we're all exquisitely different. And when you bring two of those galaxies into collision, which we do regularly, you know, emotionally and physically and sexually and whatever, new galaxies form and new possibilities form, and it's really big stuff. We think we're human beings. You know, we think, oh, I'm this little flesh and blood person. We're energy systems of enormous dynamism. And the chakra system allows us to begin to experience these through thought, through expression, through feeling, through gut power, through sexuality, and then through this huge uprising energy that comes through the base of the spine and carries us out into infinite reality. That's what we are. It's thinking about us as humans is kind of a very limited awareness. You know, and one of the things you discover as you start to let go of your egoic mind and your egoic physical being is you discover this universal propensity to be something very other than just a physical being. It's an energy force. It's an energetic reality. That's what we are, all of us. And we react that way to each other, but we all give it names. You know, he said something bad to me. It was emotional energy. Moving, taken in, turned into something, tightened up, released again. You hit somebody back. You know, you think of this as a person. Think of it as the cosmos at work, because that's what you are.
I feel like my energy is going out a lot of the times, and there's a lot of fear of invading other people's spaces or having some sort of manipulation unconsciously. How do I work with that as far as, you know, expanding, like I feel like I should and want to, without getting too much in other energies?
Keep the center of it as love. So that with the energy that's going out of you is an energy of, I keep using the word kindness and compassion. The energy of kindness and compassion is not obstructive. It's not invasive. It's not going to harm anybody. That energy is really a way of moving beyond you physically, beyond your point of view even, and allowing yourself to become part of another person. You can do it just energetically, or you can do it by reaching out and talking to somebody, touching somebody, involving yourself in somebody else's situation or life, offering to help somebody. There's so many different ways to engage in the other person out there, without it being considered a conflict or something that has tension in it. If there's tension in you when you do it, withholding, fear, concern, all of that stuff, that will get put out. And yes, you will get back something that resists that, and it will be uncomfortable for you and for them. So you have to become somewhat selfless. So it's not ego penetrating, it's a kind of universal embrace of other. And when you do that, you'll find that it enriches you, it nourishes you, it nourishes the people around you, and you feel grateful for the exchange. Does that make any sense at all? A little bit?
Yeah.
Is there a deeper part of that?
I look for the kindness and love, and I feel like I know it, and I can like tell when it's happening, but it's hard to feel, you know. Or I feel like I'll feel it, but there's so much condensedness that it's very sharp.
So it's a little bit something we talked about for a minute before, and it's sort of private and personal, but it has to do with opening your heart chakra more, getting this to open more. You are able to bypass this pretty easily for a lot of reasons. A lot of people give you, I believe, and you don't have to give back, usually. You can actually just keep taking and taking and taking on some level, which weakens your ability to give out from this space. Learning to love others, to give to others, is really a process of paying attention to the heart chakra, focusing the energy right here, and watching what happens. Slowly it will begin to, it's like kneading dough. It gets sweeter and softer and bigger, and you will become someone able to manifest love and caring and compassion and comfort for another person. You will be able to give it and not just receive it. You know, I really believe you've been on the receiving end for a very long time. That may not be your story, but that's kind of the feeling I have. So if you can learn now to give back what's been given, you will find this flow to be quite remarkable. But this is an area that needs work. And if you can do the work, you will be benefited. I know you can do it. It's in you. I mean, you know, when I work with you, that's exactly where I go. And I watch your measuring me as I'm going inside. You know, you're going, whoa, whoa, whoa. Yeah, it's a kind of a hesitation. But you may remember there was an enormous entry point today, really enormous. That's going to work for you because it's going to start speaking to you from the inside out. It's going to open you in layers you won't even be aware of for a bit, and then you're going to find out that you have one of the biggest hearts imaginable. And it's going to thrill you and everybody around you. Keep at it. Okay. Anyone else?
Is there a specific way you prepare to hold space for us when you sit?
No. Well, I mean, like I said earlier, I don't have an on switch or an off. I don't have an on switch or an off switch anymore. I used to come and sit and align myself and do something. Now that's really not the case. It's really just showing up, just being here. And when this talk is over and when we're just standing around talking, you know, or just being together, it's still on. You know, it's on all day long. It's half of the night, most of the night. It's just on. It's being present. Presence is what we are, you know, and conscious of presence is a particular quality, and that consciousness for me is expanding. It's constantly expanding. There are times I wish I could turn it off, you know, but what really is happening is I walk in the room and there it is. There I am. Of course, when I say I am, I don't mean Bruce is getting ready to work. I am is always there. But not just in me, in everybody. But most people, the I am is kind of buried under the weight of the day and the driving to Big Indian and all that other stuff. So there's a lot of letting stuff go and getting prepared and feeling ready, and then finally you just show up as I am. And there's nobody in this room who doesn't arrive there. There's nobody. Because I won't let them not get there. By that I mean, I'm going to love you into it. I'm going to find the way to touch that I am in you. And the minute it resonates, it's like a gong. Boom. And I know it. And I go, I'm done. Next. Next, 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 next. Boom, 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 boom. It's really kind of amazing. Although you each have different tones, and it's really beautiful. It's really beautiful. And that's what's going on in here. It's just getting you to I am. That's what we're doing. It's very, very simple practice, really. It's just most people are in such a state of density that getting down into that space is hard. And you got to go really penetrate. But it's there. And everyone who's here kind of wants you to get there. Kind of. And so when you arrive, you can feel there's a gratitude. I've seen people, rigid faces, hardness, etched into their daily life. And they sit down here and they bring it to the class, and somewhere in the class this face goes, you feel it. And the body gives in. Everything finally gives in. Why? Because there's no place you'd rather be than in I am. No place is better in the world. And that's why you can live alone and find I am and be content.
Thank you. Bruce, does that mean too structured or rigid while working with you?
No. No. If somebody was too rigid, I wouldn't be able to get in. And that doesn't usually happen to me. People can be rigid in some particular aspect. I don't feel that with you. But there's always a vulnerable spot. There's always a way into another person. And you present beautifully. You show up. What more can you say? You just make it easy. I just go, done.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Anyone else? Last chance for wisdom and...
I'd just like to thank you and Blanche for continuing the class with these folks and coming and showing up and making it happen.
I don't want to. Truly, nothing in me gets excited about coming to Big Indian. On the other hand, the resistance level is completely worn down, and I just go, this is what I do. You know what draws me here is that I love people. I love this. I love the group. I don't, you know my problems with Big Indian, and I think everybody has them, you know, the porta toilets and the, you know, all the stuff you got to deal with here. It's not a convenient space. But the universe, if you want to call it that, understands obligation, it understands connection, it understands love, and it brings me here and it makes it relatively easy to get here. You know, it's not that hard, and I'm grateful that I make it. But it is going against a certain amount of resistance, which I have learned over the years to not pay attention to.
So I just have a final question. Two things. I just wondered if you saw anything I need to work on. I'd love to get the teaching.
You need to be more comfortable in yourself.
Yeah.
There's an enormous amount of discomfort.
Discomfort with the...
with you.
Yeah.
And you struggle with that. And it's a waste of time. And you don't need to do it. But you're very held together. Let it go.
Shake it off.
Let it go.
Is it more about the personality structure, that pleasing, the people pleasing thing?
You're answering your own question, I think. I think
yeah.
That's a big part of it.
Yeah.
You're held in check. You're not in relaxed mode. So, you know, I can tickle you under the armpits a little bit. I can get in there a little bit. We've only met today, so it's new to me.
Okay.
But I can tell you there is a lot of holding. And that holding pattern is old. It does not reflect who you truly are. And that underneath this, you are just pure delight. Pure delight. But when was the last time you experienced yourself as pure delight? How old were you? 7? I don't know. Maybe yesterday. But you are pure delight. I see it so clearly in you. You are joy to behold if you can let go of this holding.
Thank you.
Yeah. Good luck.
Okay.
So in terms of your own spiritual growth, what was the most difficult thing that Rudy ever asked you to do?
The question is, what's the most difficult thing Rudy ever asked me to do in terms of my own spiritual growth? Boy. I don't have an answer to that. I mean, I asked Rudy if I could teach. He said, "You're not ready." That was hard. I didn't know when I would be ready. And he died before he told me I was ready. That was really difficult because I felt I was born to be a teacher. And I think he felt that too. But he was not going to make me a teacher prematurely because that can cause problems, as we have seen. So the not getting is probably the most difficult thing. On the other hand, Rudy planted inside me such a storehouse of wealth, of being, such a clarity of how to function in the world, that the fact that he delayed this for me was probably the greatest gift. But I didn't have a hard time with Rudy. You know, I mean, I just loved him. I had one wonderful experience of, he came back from India having broken up with Muktananda, and he was telling everybody, and I was out of state somewhere. And he said there was a very important class. And I got on an airplane and flew back. And I was sitting in the front row. And he looked at me and he said, "Bruce, you are a true yogi." That was the best moment ever. Because I knew what it took to show up. I knew that I had to be there at that moment, and I gave up everything else that was going on in my life, which I think was making a movie somewhere, to be there. And so he taught me, he just kept teaching me through example. And a lot of it, I guess, was difficult. Anyway, I don't have stories that I know of. If I can't come up with them, I'll tell them on one of these things, and I'll let you know that it's...
But there's always choices that have to be made along the path. Sometimes the teacher delivers the opportunity to make a difficult choice between your normal life, your personality, your ego, and your spiritual growth.
Rudy didn't do that to me. Rudy just loved me.
Yeah. Muktananda's story, no?
Well, Muktananda's not Rudy. Oh, well, Rudy did tell me to go in there.
Yeah. Okay,
well, that's a big story.
It's a big Indian story, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a big Indian story. You know that one? Okay. Rudy basically said I had to get his blessing. That's what he said. And it was not easy to do. But I did it in the end. And, Rudy's teaching was, there was no sense that he was being overly directive of my life. He was being there as a source of real, he called it reparenting. I hugged him once, and just with so much love, and he said, that's what love is. It's what you feel when you hug your mother when you're 4 years old. And he said, I'm reparenting you. And that's really what I got from Rudy. I was reparented. And I became a person that my parents were not able to make me into. They didn't have the skills or the insights. I had great parents. They weren't bad parents, but Rudy had to finish the work. And in a way, a good teacher finishes the work, you know, in whatever way they can. Sometimes it's discipline and hard action, and sometimes it's big hugs. Whatever you need, whatever the student needs, a good teacher provides. And Rudy used to say to me, don't give them what you want, give them what they need. And that was very smart. And that's what I practice.
You've talked a lot about seeing other people and the energy systems that we are. Did you come to understand that kind of like mudra just through deepening your surrender? Or is there, could you elaborate on that at all? Or am I just overthinking it?
I'm not sure if I'm understanding it correctly, the mudra work, everything has come out of letting go, of surrendering and just being, and then watching what comes of it. Mostly, when I sit still, I'm just still, and then I feel these things. I mean, you could probably watch it, you haven't been to enough of my classes, but usually somewhere my hand starts to rise. And I know the class has begun. And it's just, it's doing this thing. It's doing it now as we speak. And it's filling me with sensation. And it's directed at you. And I don't, you tell me what this has to do with you. I have no idea. This is like a weird, weird gesture. Why am I feeling so unbelievably connected to you at this moment? But I am. And when it goes back down into neutral, which it will, being back on my lap, that experience will be over but completed. And something happened. And I could see it in your face that it happened. It's, who knows? What is this? I have no clue.
There was a moment this morning on the set where I thought my hand had wanted to come up, and I didn't allow it because it felt like it would be disrespectful.
Thank you. That's really an interesting point. Hand movement is teacherly, and it is broadcasting. It's not usually receptive, although occasionally it will be, and then it won't be a problem. If somebody's hand is in receptive mode, or there's a movement going on that I can feel is helping the energy get through, that's great. But the minute a student starts doing the teaching, then it's not that it's the wrong thing, but in a class situation, it obstructs the flow. So your response was right. We tell people sit absolutely still for the class, there's a reason. There's absolutely a reason. When the time comes for you to teach, mudra may be a part of that, but I will tell you what happens. What I understand is when your hand starts to move as part of the class, it usually indicates to me that there's some healing propensity in you, that there's some capacity in you to help people through healing and feeling, touch. So that may be what's going on. I don't know. But you can watch that and see what happens. You may find when you shake hands with people or touch them in a certain way, there's a real transmission, if you will, or a connectivity, or a kind of generation of something that is passed between you. That's wonderful. Spiritual people have that capacity. It's one of the things we do. We can actually help people. And that's probably the best thing we do. we can be compassionate and loving and caring to the people around us. That's a good thing, because the opposite of that doesn't go down so well.
I sense my potential is very vast, and I get very frustrated with myself when I can't seem to like use that. So I'm just looking for some wisdom about how to let go.
The part of you that gets frustrated is the problem. Because as long as there's something in there that wants more than what is, you're expressing dissatisfaction with the isness of this moment. The moment you accept the limitation, if you will, and just sit in that limitation, whew, this thing can expand beyond belief. Your wanting it to be more is actually the very thing that's keeping it from happening. Because there's a you and an it instead of just it. The idea of duality, of being you and of ego mind and wanting the universe to be a, you know, part of your ball game, that you're it's you and the universe, that's not the way it works. There's only one thing, and you're the whole thing. The minute you get out of the way of wanting it to be this way or that way, you will find that it will be what it wants to be, and you'll be totally satisfied by it. You will experience your vastness. You will, because you are vast. It's not like you want to be vast, you are. What's causing you not to be vast is wanting to be vast. Does that make sense? You're the problem. Really. Stop being the problem. Be vast. Just be.